All week, the stock market's been spiking and dipping. Why would today be any different?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. Happy Friday. I'm Steve Chiotakis. We continue our special coverage on the economic turmoil now. Once again, stocks are going gangbusters this morning, part of a week of big-time swings. So let's start off by doing the numbers. Markets are higher right now. The Dow is up about 0.5%, 56 points at 11,199. But the Dow, just about 20 minutes ago, was up about 150 points. So again, those dips and spikes keep going on this Friday. The NASDAQ up about 0.25%. Same for the S&P 500, about 0.25% higher right now. The amount of inventory businesses are keeping on hand was up again in June, but the Commerce Department said it was the smallest increase in more than a year. Commerce also said retail sales jumped by the biggest amount in 4 months as Americans spent more on cars and on gasoline in July. The government says sales were higher than originally thought, too, in May and June. European shares are higher at the moment, anywhere from 2 to 3%. Well, earlier today in Europe, France, Belgium, Spain, and Italy prohibited traders from the practice of short selling. That's where people are allowed to make money by betting on falling stocks. Well, what does that decision in Europe mean, and how is it going to play around the world? Randall Krosner is a former governor of the Federal Reserve System. He was there in D.C. between 2006 and 2009. He's now on faculty at the University of Chicago Booth School of Business. Professor, good morning.
Good morning.
Let's talk about this short-selling ban that was implemented today in Europe. What does it say about the European debt crisis and how it's affecting banks there?
Well, I think there are fundamental concerns about, and legitimate concerns, about the stability of the banks because they have so much exposure to the to sovereign debt. But short-selling bans don't address that fundamental concern.
Do you think it's going to help? I mean, obviously you say no.
The studies that have been done on short-selling bans in the past have shown really no improvement in firm share prices and generally an increase in volatility. It's really more of an attempt to blame someone rather than focus on the fundamental factors.
So more pointing fingers there, right?
It's pointing fingers rather than admitting blame that there's a legitimate problem here, the risk of sovereign debt.
What about here in the U.S., which has said it's not going to implement a similar short-selling ban? So does it reveal anything about differing attitudes?
I think it is a difference in attitude. I think there's more understanding that short-term market movements or short-term market practices are not don't address the fundamental issues. But you do have to remember that both the U.S. and U.K. did temporarily put in some short-selling bans in September and October of 2008.
I do remember that quite well. Former Fed Governor Randall Krosner, thank you so much for your time, sir.
Thank you very much.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Constellation, supporting customer choice and clean, efficient energy sources and technologies, working with customers nationwide to create a sustainable energy future. Constellation.com. And by Allianz, managing more than $2 trillion in assets and providing investment solutions through its affiliated companies in the U.S. AllianzUSA.com.
Well, the economic turmoil we're in, of course, partially stems from the Standard & Poor's downgrade of the U.S. credit rating, which came up last night in the Republican debate in Iowa, a Fox News political forum that took place just ahead of tomorrow's big straw poll there. Minnesota Representative Michelle Bachmann was among eight candidates who appeared at the debate. When asked about how the debt ceiling debate, which was a catalyst in S&P's decision to downgrade, should have played out, Bachmann said at least she followed her principles.
We should not have increased the debt ceiling. In the last 2 months, I was leading on the issue of not increasing the debt ceiling. That turned out to be the right answer.
Well, Bachmann, of course, has made a name for herself in the Tea Party, and the Tea Party brands itself as fiscally conservative with a pledge of low taxes and lowering the nation's budget deficit. Ryan Lizza is a reporter for The New Yorker, and in this week's issue, he's got a story about how Michelle Bachmann came into her political and her economic ideals. Ryan Lizza, welcome to Marketplace.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You got it. How has Michelle Bachmann come into her economic philosophy?
In both the religious side of her policy portfolio and the economic side, she has talked about this time in her life when her father abandoned the family that thrust her family into poverty. On the economic side, she's also used that story as an example of the foundation of her anti-government, anti-spending, anti-welfare sentiment. In other words, if she got by, if she survived without the help of the government, then everyone else should as well.
While she didn't get any assistance, perhaps, when she was younger, she is getting assistance today, right, at the firm that she and her husband have and also in the farm subsidies, right?
Most of her and her husband's income has been from the government. She gets out of law school and she goes and works for, of all places, the IRS. Her husband, meanwhile, he's a psychologist and he starts a Christian counseling service. And, you know, like anyone else in the medical profession, he takes Medicare and Medicaid. And just to add to that, you know, her husband has received plentiful subsidies for a family farm in Wisconsin.
She was an evangelical even at a very young age. How do you think that affected her economic views?
Well, the thing that social conservatives and fiscal conservatives do have in common is a suspicion of the government. That's the thing that keeps this coalition together. So it doesn't matter that one group cares about abortion and the other cares about taxes. They both want the government out of their lives.
Do you see her economic views as evolving? Running for president, I mean, you've got to kind of dart to the center, right?
Her whole life has been defined by the social issues. She only got deeply interested in the economic issues in the last few years. And now, of course, as she's running for president, where the issue is spending, that is the issue that she's embraced. So there is a bit of a transformation here. I don't think that means that her views on social issues, I don't think any of that's gone away. But I think she's downplaying it now because she knows it can turn off some of the voters that she's trying to attract.
The article is called Leap of Faith. Ryan Lizza, reporter for The New Yorker, thanks for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Our special coverage on the economic turmoil, by the way, continues now at marketplace.org. You can dig into the numbers, get our podcast, or just tell us what you think of what's going on in the economy. Our website, marketplace.org. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
Abel Auction House in Commerce, California. It's where you go to find deals, and it's where we're going to go tomorrow to find out how you're dealing with the new economic normal.
When you're in something like the wine business, we don't have that flexibility to suddenly say, we're going to do something else. We're in it for the long haul.
I'm Kai Rizdal, live from the City of Commerce, next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.